because your mom is going to think you are someone else. Your friend is going to think you're someone else. Your neighbor, your classmate, your co-resident, they will all have different answers and they will all think you are someone else. You can't be all of those people. So you need to decide who do you think you are, and then you do that.
Hey everyone, my name is Bassam Zahid and welcome to episode 15 of the Dr. Hustle podcast, where it's my job to interview medical and healthcare professionals who strive for greatness in leadership, entrepreneurship, and creativity. I dig into their habits, techniques, and strategies for these high performers so that we can learn how to make a difference and apply it to our own lives. If you're part of the millennial generation, the 21st century has been quite a journey. From 9/11 to the Great Recession, to political strife, to COVID-19, it seems like the hits just keep on coming. While we are the most educated generation in American history, we also have a historic level of debt and are on track to be the first generation to do worse than our parents. It's stressful and scary, and it's no wonder that mental health issues account for 6 out of the top 10 medical concerns that afflict our generation. To help us unpack this, I've enlisted the help of Dr. J. Sheree Allen, a primary care physician and host of the Millennial Health Podcast. Dr. Allen attended residency at the Mayo Clinic and is highly accomplished in her young career. She has published with the ABC News Medical Unit, serves as an assistant medical editor with Hippo Education's Primary Care Reviews and Perspectives, and serves on the board of the American Academy of Family Physician Foundation, in addition to numerous other accomplishments and accolades. We had the opportunity to discuss how to manage mental health issues with therapy, the positive role social media can play in our lives, and how to create opportunities for yourself. Stick around to hear the interview. And while I have your attention, please don't forget to hit subscribe and leave a review if you haven't already done so. Thanks again for listening. And ladies and gentlemen, here's Dr. J. Sheree Allen. So Dr. Allen, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
You have done a lot so far. You have a very young career. You are the host of the Millennial Health Podcast. You've participated in a number of boards. I want to ask you about this. You make it no secret on your podcast that you see a therapist. In the field of medicine, where we often hide our struggle and we like champion our resilience, I find this very courageous. Why is it so important to you to be open about this?
It's really important that we share the good with the not so good. I won't call it bad because I don't think it's bad. But I think as much as we celebrate and promote those highs, it's also important to balance that picture out and also let our audience know that lows exist too, you know? And initially, when I started going to therapy, it was a result of being burnt out. I was in my first year of practice and I did not recognize that I would miss the camaraderie of my co-residents as much as I did, you know, having someone to turn around and say, what would you do? What antibiotic should I order? Like, is that the dose? You take that kind of stuff for granted when you are working in a setting such as myself, a critical access hospital, where when I'm on, I'm the only doctor in the hospital. So I really missed that. I think residency also shields you significantly from the administrative burdens, the regulatory demands of medicine and the day-to-day grind of healthcare. That was a rude awakening for me while getting into practice. You know, I'm accustomed to sitting and asking all these questions and spending time, but you have productivity goals. You have quality metrics that, you know, they try to get you to that bar in residency, but really that's not what residency is all about. Being in community practice, you better hit those numbers, you know? And so I think the combination of all those things, and everyone talks about the steep learning curve in that first 2 years in practice. So true. Couldn't be more true. So it was just the perfect storm, to be quite frank. And I spoke to another physician who'd made a huge transition. She left her practice and went into another. And her advice to me was I should try going to therapy. I had no idea what therapy was going to do, but I was so desperate at the time for answers, for help, that I decided to take her up on her offer. And I reached out and found a therapist. It was incredible. absolutely incredible. And for two specific reasons. One, therapy helped me to set boundaries in my work life. I wasn't doing a good job with that. I had not a touch, maybe like a whole feel of imposter syndrome, being a new doctor, feeling the need to prove myself not only to my patients, but also my colleagues. So that was weighing heavily on me. So I was going above, like really, really, really above and beyond, saying yes to all the committees I was asked to sit on, you know, attending every single lunch meeting in person. You know, that then led to my notes being done later at night after everyone is already gone and I had time to focus and put it all together. Because in those beginning stages of practice, you're looking everything up. On up to date. I mean, I have two screens. One's up to date and one's epic, you know, and that takes time. So setting those boundaries, which is what therapy gave me the courage to do, really helped. And then it also helped me to reframe the situation that I was currently in. I signed up for this job for a reason and I lost sight of that, but therapy was able to help me to put that back into perspective. So it's not a weakness. It's not a bad thing. I think that's actually good and something that I highly encourage.
Now, was there ever a point when this was being presented to you that you resisted it? Because I feel like it's still, I mean, I feel like if somebody told me, you know, hey, like you might benefit from therapy, and I feel like you don't necessarily have to be depressed even to benefit from it, I would still resist and say, no, maybe something else can help me before I even go to that step.
That is certainly an issue that I think we have to work on in our society, that something doesn't have to be wrong or we shouldn't wait for things to go all the way left before we seek help. I think my situation was a little unique that I reached out for the help. So the suggestion was welcomed in my situation. I can certainly understand how one would, however, be, you know, just a little offended, a little, you know, is there something wrong? Do you think I have an issue? You know? So for me, it wasn't that case. I was the one who reached out because I recognized the burnout in myself and I just didn't know what to do. In residency, you talk to your chief or you talk to your program director, you know, but as an attending, this isn't the responsibility of the other doctor I work with or, you know, so I didn't know where to turn. So it was a good option for me at the time, but I completely understand what you're saying. I would challenge us, however, to try to do our part to erase the stigma that is surrounding, you know, counseling and speaking to someone and getting a professional objective, you know, point of view on your situation. I want us to work really hard to do that. And that includes fighting some of that. Do you think something's wrong with me? Why I need therapy? No, I think it should be a tool that we utilize even before we get to the point of something being wrong.
Residents also go through some sort of burnout or depression. I mean, we hear about it all the time. Sometimes they might feel like they have less support, ironically, because their voices might be smaller and they're more worried about how an evaluation might affect their future. And especially today, you know, in today's time, like with all the burnout and depression that physicians or health providers in general are facing with COVID, what sort of advice would you have for them on either finding a way to reach out or finding a way to take time to self-reflect on, because you might not even know that you're struggling.
First, I second what you're saying here, that this is a hard time in healthcare, which is the underlying kind of message here. I encourage residents and attendings alike to carve out some time to evaluate the state of your upcoming week. So I do that on Sundays. So on Sunday evenings, I spend about 20 to 30 minutes. I have a planner that I sit with and I see what I have coming up every day for that week. The majority of the day is obviously work. So that's kind of carved out. But, you know, I have podcast recordings, you know, whether it's for my own or I'm a guest on another podcast. I want to do some writings. I'm working on a startup. Do I need to do some information, you know, or return some calls or some emails on that, right? So I schedule those things. Do I have some Zoom meetings coming up? Am I giving a talk? So once I do that, kind of separate my week, then I see where I can have some pockets of downtime. And I use that time to do nothing. It is so hard for us as physicians, no matter what stage of our career we're in, to do nothing. Like, rest is okay. And that's the only time that you're going to, in a healthy manner at the very least, figure out that something is wrong. Like, don't run till the wheels fall off. Like, actually take the time to stop, evaluate how much you're doing, evaluate how you're feeling, right? What's your energy level like? How are you feeling emotionally? Are you becoming quite irritable and snapping, you know, at things that really wouldn't make you angry, you know? Are you getting enough sleep? Are you eating well? Are you making time to exercise? And it's hard to do all of those things, but you have to choose what's important to you and what's core in your life and spend a little time to see if you are carving out the time to do those things. If not, make some changes and whatever that means for you. But you can't fix a problem that you don't even take the time to recognize that a problem exists. So that's step one, is spending a little time to look at where's your time going? What are you spending this time doing? And do you need to make some changes there? That's how I'd recommend we start before I even talk about therapy.
Yeah. For you personally, when you have your downtime to do nothing, are you like writing? Are you praying? Are you meditating? How are you like finding your like center?
On my couch, just hanging out. If I feel like it, I'll scroll through Twitter or Instagram. If I feel like it, I'll binge something on Netflix. I just binged The Crown season 4. And, you know, if I feel like it, I'll read something. But I give myself permission to not have anything on my calendar. So I'll do what I feel like doing at that time. You know, there's this pie chart that I really like. And it says, you know, what I thought would make me successful. And there's one chart that's like 100% hard work. And then there's another chart and it's, you know, I don't know the actual percentages, but, you know, maybe like a fourth of it is like hard work and, you know, like, I don't know, whatever, another quarter or something is like rest and the next is exercise and, you know, healthy eating and, you know, different portions. And it's all those things that need to come together to help us to work and operate at our best. You know, I know in medicine, we are about that life. We are here for the grind. We all have a hustle 2 or 3 going, but you have to take time to unwind. And whatever you choose to do in that time, you do it. Don't put anything on the planner.
So one of the big reasons I wanted to talk to you about mental health was on your podcast, Millennial Health. You had this very interesting episode on the top 10 health problems for millennials, which I learned a lot from. I did not know that 6 out of the top 10 mm-hmm. problems are mental health related. Why do you think that is? Why do you think, you know, mental health is such a big issue?
I think it's multifactorial. So one, I think we're a different generation in that we are a little more open about those issues, right? There's so many more of us who are willing to say, you know, I do have a diagnosis of anxiety, or I am depressed, or I've been burned out, or, you know, I have gone to therapy. I think more people are open to being truthful about that, especially in medicine too. So I think that is one. So maybe generations before us actually had the same rates, who knows, but the stigma was so different at that time that maybe they didn't speak out about it. Also, I think the physicians of today are a little more in tune with that, because if we don't ask, then how will we know? You know, how many doctors then said to the patient when they came in for, you know, fatigue, and they're like, oh, doc, I'm so tired all the time, I can't sleep. And, you know, can you give me something to help me sleep? Or can you check my thyroid and make sure I don't have like a thyroid problem? You know, my mom did, you know, like, yes, those are valid medical concerns that we evaluate thoroughly in the primary care setting. However, a differential to add to that is also an altered mental state, right? Are we scoring a little high here on our PHQ-9, on our GAD-7, you know? So if our doctors aren't asking, sometimes that doesn't prompt the patient to provide that extra information. So I think the docs of today are picking up on that a little more. Another thing, I think too, as millennials, we have a different relationship with kind of work-life balance and what we want to see our lives kind of looking like. And I think that is impacting us as well in the ways we decide to speak out on things. And then another one, I won't blame it on this, but I think it's a huge contributing factor that's worth some more evaluation, social media and just this constant presence of the perfect, you know, well-curated life that we see everyone put on their feeds. It's like, oh my gosh, like, whoa, they're married. Oh, wow, another baby. Oh, they have a new job. Like, that starts to wear on you eventually without you even recognizing it. And I think that is impacting us a little more than we may know or willing to even admit.
Just to run down these top 10. Major depression was number one, substance mm-hmm. use, alcohol use, four mm-hmm. is hypertension, but five is hyperactivity, six is psychotic conditions, seven is Crohn's disease or ulcerative colitis, eight is high cholesterol, nine is tobacco use disorder, 10 is type 2 diabetes. And you mentioned social media, and I thought it was kind of interesting that you yourself just said that you kind of find escape in it sometimes. And I was like kind of surprised. How do you think, since everybody's on social media, what do you think is like a healthy way to use it?
You have to curate your feed. Do you know, or do you ever notice that like sometimes you're scrolling on Instagram, right? And you see a post either by someone or about something that just like your heart clinches and you, yeah. On the top right-hand corner of that picture, there are three little buttons, right? Click that and hit unfollow, okay? And then keep scrolling every single time that happens to you. I think we need to get comfortable with allowing things in our space that make us feel good and are productive and help us to build stronger, healthier lives. There's a lot of good to be found in social media. I think it's just when it's misused. So if you're there, please don't use social media to stalk your ex and look at, oh my God, and he's so happy. And he's so, no, that friend you no longer talk to, unfollow. You don't need to consume your life with things that aren't productive, that aren't helpful, that don't bring you joy, you know? And there is some danger in that, right? Especially now we're coming off of an election as we're recording this. So, you know, if you follow people who only think like you and, you know, only offer an opinion that you'd share, you have to ensure that that's not your primary source of news, okay? So that you're actually tuning in to other primary sources to get your news. So this is your social feed. I think we have long blurred the lines. We can't even undo the amount of blurring that we've done now. But, you know, there's a difference between keeping up with the lives of your friends and the people you love and getting advice from, you know, whether it's, you know, people who work out or share healthy meal ideas, that sort of thing, and hearing about world news. There's a very different, you know, role for that. And I think we need to be clear on that. And then decide like what you're using your social media platform for, you know. To be honest, I was one of those people that I think my Instagram kind of made me a little like, oh, like I wish, you know, I had that clenching that I talked about. Yeah, that was me. And in being honest, I started on following, and then thank God for Instagram. They have this new thing now that you can mute. So you don't have to like totally unfollow someone, but they just don't show up in your feed anymore. I use that liberally. All right. So that's my Instagram, my Twitter. I actually only follow medical professionals for the most part on my Twitter. So that's how I keep in touch. And that was kind of a part of my burnout recovery plan, actually, believe it or not, because I miss that camaraderie of having co-residents or other people in the medical field who I could just easily bounce ideas off of or talk to. And believe it or not, I've actually curated a really good group of that on Twitter. So I use my Twitter for that purpose. So I think what we need to do with social media is take our power back and use it to fulfill the mission that we want it to fulfill in our lives, and not the other way around.
That's great. Let's talk about your podcast, Millennial Health. Very easy to listen to, lots of really great content. Why Millennial Health?
Millennials are now the largest living adult generation in the United States. And our health matters. If we are not healthy, that impacts the workforce, that will impact the economy of this country, that will impact the political climate of this country. Every single thing about this country will change based on the health of millennials. Because if you have your health, you have options in life. If you don't have your health, genuinely, no matter how much money you have, access to the best doctors. I mean, there's so many examples, right? So many people who, unfortunately, this has been their case. Without health, you have nothing. So I don't want us as millennials to wait until the burden of chronic disease has set in before we decide to start working on healthy lifestyles. I want us to adopt a preventive approach, and that includes knowledge and getting the information, knowing what you should be aware of, knowing what the top 10 issues that affect us are, knowing what you should ask for in trying to see a therapist or a primary care doctor, knowing, okay, what's included in the different types of diets and which ones are healthy and which ones aren't, knowing what plant-based nutrition is all about, because everybody talks about it, right? Knowing how your vote impacts your health. Those things are important. And I want to be on the front end of distilling that information in a palatable manner for millennials. And so that's why I do that podcast.
So we've mentioned the top 10 health problems. For you, what stands out as one of the great problems for us to solve?
Our mental health issues. Yeah. As a primary care physician, you know, I really do need to run the numbers at some point in time, but not the chief complaints, but the diagnoses that come out of my visits. You know, I often see, like I'd mentioned before, people coming in not to say like, oh, doc, I'm depressed. Oh, doc, could you help me? No, it's, you know, I'm tired and I can't sleep and like this hurts. And like, you know, just like a litany of complaints and concerns. And if you take the time, you know, if you have that time to sit with the patient and really start getting to the root of their issues, under there, you more often than not find some worry about what they're what's going on in their lives, or, you know, the state of their health overall, or their ability to continue providing for their family. You find some concern that, you know, maybe a medical condition that took their father or their mother's life, they're concerned that it may end up happening to them. Or, you know, if you just have the time, which is why I advocate so much for us as primary care physicians, really having the time to get to the bottom of those issues with our patients, you know, they're trying to explain some things that genuinely require time to sit with and get to the bottom of these issues. And honestly, sometimes that's best done with a therapist, like not, you know, it's not your thyroid, like, no, you're not anemic. That's what I see affecting us most. Because if you are not in a good state of health mentally. No matter what I tell you about your diabetes, no matter how much I try to encourage you to exercise or stress the importance of, you know, holding back on that salt shaker with your heart failure or, you know, taking this blood pressure medication at this particular time, all these things that I throw at you, if mentally you are just stressed out, it's not going to get through. It's not. And so I think genuinely, if I could help my patients do one thing, it would be to be in a good state of health mentally, because I think you can make a lot of other really good decisions for your life if mentally you're clear.
So there's a lot to unpack there. First of all, you mentioned time and, you know, time even for primary care physicians is limited and there's not enough primary care physicians to see everybody that needs to be seen and give everyone the time that they deserve to have. Two, in trying to figure out and impact somebody's mental health, sometimes, and you've mentioned this on your podcast, you've mentioned it on Urgent Rap and Hippo Education, but some of the challenges are structural. So we can say, take your health into account, you know, make sure you have a colorful plate. But if you're not getting enough time off from your job, if you don't feel secure enough with your boss, or, you know, you're behind on rent, I mean, these are structural issues that are I don't know how a therapist can solve those. What do we do?
Yeah, you're mentioning those social determinants of health. Yeah, no, a therapist cannot solve those issues at all. A therapist doesn't fix everything. My husband laughs at me because he said I'm just trying to get everybody to go to therapy. But, you know, I think it helps to put you in a frame of mind that you can start to really tackle some of the other issues in your life. It's just really hard to advocate for yourself, to be a good advocate for the loved ones who you're caring for, and to put yourself in a position where you truly feel empowered to speak up or speak out when you're just struggling, you know, mentally. It's not everything. Therapy will not fix everything. It's not the solution for everything. But I think we underestimate how much it does help to really have that clarity. It does.
One of the topics you mentioned in your podcast is lifestyle medicine. I'm a big fan of this. I would call it a philosophy. Can you talk about what lifestyle medicine is and how we can optimize our lives to get to that place?
Yeah, and I am by no means an expert in lifestyle medicine at all. I've brought experts onto my show to educate me about it, you know, but I think it's important for us to recognize that fundamentally, pills can't undo or medicines can't undo poor choices that we make in regards to our health, whether that's the food we put or don't put in our bodies, the exercise that we make the time for, the exercise that we do or don't do, the sleep that we get or we don't get, right? Fundamentally, some of those things have to be in place. It just gives you a good foundation. I do want to acknowledge, however, that there genuinely are these social determinants that you'd made mention of earlier in the podcast that really do impact our patients and their ability, no matter how well-intentioned they are, or no matter how well their doctor has laid this all out for them and created this really nice plan. There are genuinely structural issues here at play that prevent the most well-intentioned of individuals from being able to carry out some of these principles in their daily lives. But you just want to look essentially at the types of foods that you are eating. So more plant-based, more natural, less processed foods, as opposed to things that are made in factories. You know, they say when you walk into the supermarket, you want to gravitate more to the produce section and spend more time there. So that's the perimeter of the supermarket as opposed to the packaged goods in the middle. You know, spend spending some time moving your body. These are some of their essential principles, you know, moving your body, whether whatever exercise looks like to you or feels like to you, that's okay. But something that gets that heart pumping, gets that blood flowing, you know, drinking more water and less, you know, sugary products, and really getting good sleep, you know, in your life, if at all possible. So just trying to ensure our health with the lifestyle decisions that we make, or those healthier habits, as opposed to trying to correct them on the back end with procedures and medications, is the basic sort of principle that we want to get across.
Right. And one of the things that I find most helpful is it's never all going to happen at one time or overnight. It's mm-hmm. about moving the needle slowly. So maybe mm-hmm. one day you're like, I'm going to at least make one meal healthy. Mm-hmm. The next day you're saying, maybe I'm going to try to keep that one meal healthy and maybe walk for 5 minutes or mm-hmm. do something else for 5 minutes just to move the needle towards something positive.
Yes, in the right direction. That's kind of like the Meatless Mondays concept, you know, just trying, you know, one step at a time to include those basic steps in your daily life.
One of the biggest structural injustices that we're dealing with right now, and especially this whole year, you know, it's been essentially a major theme, is racism. As an African-American physician, I mean, it's an everyday issue, unfortunately, but so how do you manage that? And then how do you come out if at all, you know, seeing some sort of hope or anything like that, if at all?
I do see some hope. I do. I almost think in my own way, I think podcasting is my protest. You know, as a Black physician, especially in a town that is predominantly white, you know, I work in a critical access hospital. I am the only Black woman doctor in that entire facility. Actually, I'm the only Black woman employee. Yep. In the what? Entire facility. Yes. I have one colleague who's a Black male physician, and that's it. We are the only two Black people employed by the entire hospital in the town where we work. Yeah. I need to think a little harder on that. No, I know all the Black people. No, it's us. It's us. And
what?
It's a lot. It's a lot. You know, context on why I'm even there. I'm a National Health Service Corps scholar. I actually signed up for that program while I was in medical school. I committed to working in an underserved community for 3 years after my residency training. It could have been urban. It could have been rural. I did my residency at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. And it was during my time while training at Mayo that I learned there was a whole world to medicine that I genuinely knew nothing about. You know, going to Meharry, we went to Meharry together. That's how we know each other. Going to Meharry, you know, our patients were mainly underserved, underrepresented, Black and Latinx patients in Nashville. And my exposure to medicine prior to that was from New York City. I grew up right outside the Bronx. So Jacoby Medical Center, I'm working with Dr. Yvette Calderon in that HIV program, you know, Dr. Holden. That was my exposure to medicine. And then Meharry. So it was really coming to Mayo for my residency where I started to gain some exposure to a rural population, because Mayo, you know, of course, everyone hears about us in the news, just people fly from everywhere to come to Mayo. But there's also a local population that we have to care for. And stretching outside of just the town of Rochester, Minnesota, I mean, you're in a rural setting. And I was really intrigued by some of the challenges that were being faced by our rural patients, something I knew nothing about because I just had no exposure. And so I made the decision then, since I had a 3-year contract anyway, and my goal was always to go back into an urban environment, go back to probably to New York and work in the Bronx, you know, why not use this time to expand my horizons, learn a little more about I'm in family medicine. So, you know, some of these predominant family medicine populations, of which rural health is a major one. And so I just need to clarify why I'm in this town. I was like, so why are you there? Because yes, I wanted to expand my horizons and gain a firsthand experience, on the ground knowledge of what it was like to practice in a rural setting, to add that to the information I'd already gathered from my residency training. So that's why I'm there. Reframing, got that from my therapist. So, you know, being there, I think dealing with being an African-American woman, especially in the midst of everything that happened with George Floyd, I am in the state of Minnesota. So this was right here in our backyard. You know, I focused on providing good care for my patients. I think I put that first and foremost. And then I dealt with my feelings, I think, on my off time. And what I decided that I had to do was speak out and speak up in some way. But obviously in the town where I work and now live, I mean, protesting on the street wasn't going to do anything here. And so I actually approached Hippo Education, a company that I work for as an assistant medical editor with their Primary Care Reviews and Perspectives podcast, about starting a race and medicine series. And so we've launched that series as a way for me to discuss a lot of the things that I wish I could get on a mountaintop and say. And maybe if I lived in, you know, Chicago or in New York or a Minneapolis, you know, maybe I would have just joined my colleagues who are in the vicinity and speak up in that regard. But I had to get creative based on where I was, you know, and my current circumstances. And I had a microphone and I have a computer that allows me to get in touch with other people. And so I really do mean that podcasting is my protest. It's, you know, I've spoken to Dr. Joy Creer Perry, who is a national leader in Black maternal health disparities. You know, I've had conversations with Dr. Utibe Essien on health disparities and how institutions can work to become, you know, anti-racist in their endeavors. You know, I've had these wonderful conversations that are being heard by thousands of physicians. And that's how I think I've dealt with this as a Black woman. And thanks, though, to awesome allies who have shared their platform. My co-host, Dr. Netta Freja, I wouldn't be here without her, right, helping in this endeavor. So it's possible to process this in different ways. And for me, it was through podcasting.
That's awesome. When it comes to creating a podcast or writing, you once worked for the ABC News Medical Unit. What is your creative process like? How do you work with an idea?
I wish I had a deep, profound answer. I wish I did. But, you know, I actually draw inspiration. This is so terrible, but from social media. I will scroll and I'll see, you know, a post that really strikes me, or I'll see a person who'll say something and I'm like, interesting. I should ask them more about that. Or, you know, I'll see a quote and I'll say, wow, like, I wonder what that means on like a deeper level. And then I'll think of the people I know and approach them and see who's interested in talking about a certain issue like that. You know, for me, I'm constantly thinking about health related topics. So that's kind of what stands out to me. I've also told you before, I curate my feed. So I see a lot of things doctors say or health professionals say. So it kind of sparks that in me. So I don't have a super deep answer. And I love that I don't have a super deep answer, because then I think it opens this up to others to know that it doesn't require, you know, some super, I don't know, deep knowledge base to be able to get to a place where you too can do something like this. You can create a platform, you can share, you know, educational information in a responsible manner. You know, so I like that I don't have a deep, super creative, you know, process. But believe it or not, it's the questions I see other people ask or the questions I ask myself that I chase after some answers there.
Which kind of goes towards essentially creating opportunity for yourself. Mm-hmm. And following your career, I feel like you're very good at opening doors. and like I mentioned before, so early in your career, you're already serving on a number of boards. For example, you know, who does that? You do. So how do you create these opportunities for yourself? How did you get to work with Hippo Education, or who's the get on the board for the American Academy of Family Physicians?
Mm-hmm.
How does that work?
I chase these dreams. I do. I'll be very practical though, so I can give you some examples of exactly how to go about this. The family medicine has a huge conference every year called FMX, and it rotates different cities. Every specialty has one of these conferences, huge, thousands of people. There are always lots of sponsors and companies that show up to, you know, have their booth and kind of, you know, promote their product. My residency program purchased a subscription to Hippo Education for us as a part of our CME package. I really enjoyed the podcast. And at FMX, the Family Medicine Conference, Hippo Education had a booth. I walked up to the booth. I said hello and introduced myself to the people who were staffing the booth.
This is groundbreaking.
And said, I am Dr. G. Sheree Allen, and I love your podcast. I'm a huge fan of your product. Step one, compliment the people on what they already do. So you should know what they're doing if you're going to approach them to ask to do something with them. The second thing, they had put out a call for a social media ambassador. And that was just around the time that I'd created my website. And I was really starting to get intentional about my Twitter feed and the content I was putting out. And so I applied to be their social media ambassador. So really, I wanted to introduce myself so they could put a face to the name of that application that I knew, you know, probably not the people staff in the booth would read the application, but at least they could send the name back and tell them, hey, look out for this. So I ended up doing that. I literally just walked up. I said, hello, I'm Dr. J.S. Allen. Nice to meet you guys. I really like your podcast. I'm a huge fan. By the way, I applied for your social media ambassador program, and they said, oh, okay, yes, we'll look into that and we'll get back to you. And then I said, you know, I'd be more than happy to do that. But if not, if there are any other opportunities to collaborate with you, I'd be more than interested in that too. And Dr. Netta Freja said, well, we should record something together. At this point in time, Millennial Health, did I even start Millennial Health yet? I can't even remember. But I really didn't have solid podcasting experience. I was no expert in anything. Nothing. I was like, sure, we should record something together. Absolutely. She gave me her information. And after I left, I sent an email. You don't give me your information. It stays in my pocket or stays in my bag or no. At the end of meeting, you know, people, I send an email and I emailed her and said, hi, I am G. Sheree Allen. We met at FMX. You offered that we could do something together or we could record something together. I've been thinking about these topics. Do you think those would be good topics to record? That's it. And she was like, oh, sure. Next thing I know, they're sending me a microphone. They're sending me pop filters. They're having me fill out disclosure forms. I'm like, whoa, this is moving fast here. But that's honestly all it takes. You have to open up your mouth and ask. And after the ask, you need to follow up. How I got on the board of the AAFP Foundation, I ran for the position. They had a call for residents who were interested in this position. I wrote an application up and then I was strategic, right? It's a foundation board. If you want to get a foundation board, you need to donate money to this foundation. So I made sure I donated to the foundation. I got that pin that you get for donating. And when it was time for me to give my speech about why I should be considered for this board, I made mention of the fact that I want to get on this board because I already support the work of this board. So you need to be intentional and really just go out there and get it and then follow through.
I love that answer. Thank you so much for sharing that. It kind of reminds me, a couple of years ago, I went to the New Yorker Festival and I saw Dr. Atul Gawande speak. And one of the things he said about creating opportunity was say yes to everything before 40 and say no to everything afterwards. And I thought that was kind of interesting because I feel like even for myself, the best opportunities for myself came when I was presented with an opportunity to do something different than what I had already done. And to mm-hmm. that, I would say yes, because I figured if anything, I would learn the process along the way. And so I really like that. And I really like the idea that you have to be strategic. You have to think probably a couple steps ahead versus just, okay, here's an application. Let me just send in something for this application. Maybe you need to, you're almost working for the position you want in 15 mm-hmm. years. Mm-hmm. You know, you almost mm-hmm. have to have the long game.
Yep. And to add to that, I did not get the role as that social media ambassador. They hit me with the thank you. You know, we received many qualified applications. I mean, so that did not work out. But I'm now an assistant medical editor with the company, right? So something far greater than what I could even have imagined. There's no way I approached Netta at that meeting thinking I would ever be an AME for this awesome company, right? So dream big too.
So, which brings me to another step. You know, usually you think having a website as a physician or even any kind of professional, you know, you usually think it belongs to, you know, the biggest names in the field. And you might think, why would I create a website? What would I put on the website? Yet, not only do you have a very polished website, which we'll link in the show notes, but... One of the things you also mentioned in your podcast that I thought was very interesting was that at some point you hired a business manager. This is essentially your like a blueprint for how do I create my professional life. What made you decide, all right, I needed a business manager? How did you find one? And even more importantly, why did you think you needed one?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think of her a lot like a coach, actually. And, you know, if even the best basketball players or football players have coaches, why don't other people in other professions have coaches as well, right? That was kind of my mentality when I approached her. So I think the first step for me was this therapy, right? That cleared the clutter from my mind. It really freed up mental space to do a lot of other things. The issue was I didn't know how to go about doing those things. And so as a physician with a really busy day-to-day life, you know, in the clinic, and I told you I work rural, so I also have to cover the hospital at times and sometimes our critical access ER as well. I genuinely didn't have the time to be able to dig into that. But I have a salary that allowed me to pay someone to help me dig into that. So if you don't have the money, then you've got to carve out the time. So one of the two things can get you to the same destination. So I knew I needed a website, but it's like, do I really? And what's even on this website? And how do I organize all the information to get on the website? So I just hired this coach. I hired this business coach who I met in New York greater than 10 years ago when I was actually running my nonprofit in New York. And we kept in touch peripherally by social media.
It's back again.
Back again. Honestly, there are really responsible ways to utilize social media in your life. So yeah, I mean, this is not someone I called on the phone or even sent an email or a text to in 10 years, but I'd kind of been keeping up with what she'd been doing on Instagram. And I saw that she launched a coaching program for women who are trying to launch small businesses. I reached out to her. I said, you know I have big dreams. I know I have big goals. I honestly can't even articulate them to you at this point in time because I don't even know what they are. But I do need some help in getting organized. And she was like, absolutely. Obviously, you got to pay for her services. What she helped me to do step by step. One, it was over the course of 3 months. We met every single Friday for 1 hour over the course of 3 months to organize, you know, what is my mission? What do I see as the highest, grandest vision for myself? Who are the key people in my life that I can reach out to see where there are some opportunities that may be untapped? And then she said, all right, let's start working on your website now. We need a web page. We need to create a bio. She was like, just send me all the things you've done, like all the papers you've published, all the podcasts you've done, send them all to me. And she organized them extremely well for me in a really good format. She found a graphic designer who made the site, who built my media kit, who designed my logo. They did all of that for me, right? Putting all that stuff together. Again, these are things you can do yourself if you have the time. After we did that, then she helped me to craft a couple emails with my ask. And I literally just went through my Gmail and I was like, that person, I haven't caught up with them in a while. Sent them a little email. Hello. Hi. You know, it's Jay Cherie. I know we haven't spoken in a while, you know, since graduating from residency, I've been working here and doing XYZ. These are now some of the things I'm working on. You know, I see that you are doing XYZ. If there's ever any opportunity for collaboration, please let me know. So many things have come out of that, you know? So she helped me to do that as well. And then I knew I wanted to get this podcast going. And she told me, she was really good. She told me, before you invest in, you know, everything for the podcast, why not try doing some lives on Instagram or on Facebook? And that's what I did. I did the Instagram lives for a while and I just loved it. I was basking in the opportunity to sit here and talk to people. And I was like, you know, I think I want to go the podcasting route as a physician. I think it's just a little more, professionally accepted, I guess I would say. I'm not going to put an Instagram live on my CV. I do put a podcast on my CV, you know, that sort of thing. So I decided I would go that route and it's paid off immensely. So the advantage in this business coach was someone who could see a strategy because she's done it before for other people and helped me to apply that to the thoughts I had and the things I was able to do. It would have taken a lot for me to have done all of that on my own.
So a lot of times I'm pretty introverted. And I feel like with any creative endeavor, there's sometimes a part of me, and I feel like maybe a lot of people feel like this also, where you wonder, you know, if I start putting stuff out there and if I start almost self-promoting, which is something that might not be, which isn't natural to me. Mm-hmm. What would people say? And would they think that I'm trying to get too big for my, you know, my britches or something like that? Did you have that kind of feeling at all?
Before I answer that, I'll ask you a question. You said, what would people say? Who right. are these people?
Right. I mean, they could be friends. They could be like classmates. They could be, even my parents, you know, like, what would they think? Like, who do they might be thinking, who does this guy think he is?
You need to answer that question. Yeah. Who do you think you are?
Yeah.
I think Marianne Williamson says it really nicely in her poem. Is it A Return to Love? I think it's called. It's so good. You know, please look that up or add it in the show notes.
Yeah,
it's so good. So good. But you really do need to dig deep and ask yourself that question. Who do you think you are? Because that is the answer that matters. Because your mom is going to think you are someone else. Your friend is going to think you're someone else. Your neighbor, your classmate, your co-resident, they will all have different answers and they will all think you are someone else. You can't be all of those people. So you need to decide who do you think you are? And then you do that. Live a life that is true to that. Answer your calling on your life, not other people's expectations of your life. And so I completely, especially those of us who are physicians, you know, I get it. You think of it as like self-promotion and, you know, making yourself too big. And, you know, I'm Jamaican. Big Jamaican thing is like, you're enough. Like you're too big. You think you're all of that, sir, you know, is what they'd say in my culture. But, you know, yes. The answer is yes. I do think I am someone. I do think I have something to offer. Yes, I am a big deal. I am. Ooh, I absolutely am.
Real talk.
You need to own this. You need to own who you are. You know, please be responsible in that. responsible in the way that you use your platform, right? As a physician, whether you choose to use this platform or not, you have one, right? The things you say as Dr. So-and-so, it carries weight, right? So you need to make sure you're responsible. You put up your boundaries around this, that your intentions are pure, that you are genuine in what you are trying to put out into this world, and that, you know, you are offering what you truly believe you came here to do. Even if you're figuring it out, you're on the journey, you're still discovering what that purpose is. Walking in that truth is okay. You are allowed to be a masterpiece and a work in progress at the very same time. And it's okay to do that.
I love that. I love that. I also love the fact that you repeatedly mentioned the idea of being intentional, which I think is very important. And I feel like you've done that across your career. So my question is, where have you found inspiration, whether it's books or websites or music or anything like that, that you feel like has given you guidance or some sort of light?
A few places, actually. So I think the default, you know, a lot of people say your family, you know, my family does that for me. But I think I'll explain what I mean when I say my family, because it really is my family. So one, and I think this is so important too for us as millennials, you have to marry a good person. I didn't recognize this, believe it or not, until I got married. I am genuinely inspired by my husband. I really am. I think he is one of the greatest people I've ever had the pleasure of meeting. He is incredibly devoted. He is humble. He is kind. I've seen him bounce back from disappointments and tragedies and unmet expectations, and the way he lives his life. You know, it's almost an honor to have a front row seat to someone just walking so intentionally in what God has designed for them. It's incredible. So you need good people in your life, because you can truly draw inspiration from those people. So I think, you know, especially for those of us, we're at the age where we're getting married and choosing partners, please choose a partner well. Please choose a partner well. It makes the world of a difference in your life. You know, understanding, kind of making that switch from your parents are these like amazing people who you have on this pedestal, who have it all figured out and, you know, have done so many wonderful things in life, or whatever, so many bad things in life, depending on your perspective. You know, transform that perspective to they are also human, and just kind of understanding, like, my mom was just a 25-year-old girl who like got pregnant, and like these were the cards that she was dealt. And, you know, this is kind of what she did with the life that she had, you know, made the decision. Like, start looking at your parents like that, because then you'll recognize some of the decisions we're now facing and we're dealing with, they did in their own way at their time. And evaluating how they did that really does help. I draw so much inspiration from my understanding of my mother and my father as people, as opposed to these gods that I always had them as prior to growing up. That's helped a lot. So the people in your life matter. The next thing I would say, the books that you read also matter a ton. So some that I've read recently that have really, and I have a ton of books, by the way, that I have made it through chapter 1, 2, 3, and maybe 4, and I'm yet to finish the book. So again, I don't want to sound deep and profound, like, oh my God, she reads all these books. No, I have a lot of half read or a third read books sitting here. But some that have really touched me, there's one called More Than Enough by Elaine Welteroth that I would highly, highly, highly recommend everyone under the age of 40 read. If you are a millennial, please pick up this book. She was the first Black, it's like editor-in-chief of Teen Vogue, but she also had quite a few other positions in that media publishing realm. And her story is incredible. And the way she's able to inspire us with her story, I also thought was incredible. The thing that touched me the most, though, about her book, and she wrote this at the very end, that her brother said, like, how old are you? Like, what are you doing writing, like, a book? And it touched me because you're never too young to actually do something major. Like, you're never too young to do something bigger than what you think you're capable of doing. So more than enough, check that out. Another book that has been incredible is Bob Iger. Why can't I remember the name of this book? He is the former CEO of the Walt Disney Company. He put out a book recently as well, and I got through that one really quickly because I felt everything I was going through at my job was just like so in this book. It was called The Ride of a Lifetime. Please read that book. In the cover of the book, he lists some principles that he thinks are key to success. I mean, some of them, like chronic indecision, you know, like just some of these things that you have no idea, like, how, if you don't break these sorts of habits, they really do ruin your opportunities for, you know, pursuing anything in life in the future. Really, really, really recommend that book. Barack Obama's Promised Land just showed up in the mail today. And I have 4 days off coming up in the next week. So that's going to be my project then. And obviously, I mean, Becoming was incredible as well. Everyone, I mean, it was probably one of the best-selling books of all time at this point in time. So yeah, Becoming was huge as well. So those, I think, are my top three that I've read recently. I'm working on a startup. So I'm reading The Lean Startup right now. And next in my list is one called Never Split the Difference. Yes. I've heard really good things about that one. I know all these books.
These are all great books.
So there's some good stuff out there. Like, immerse yourself in it. Yeah.
That's awesome. One thing I do appreciate also, just as a side, is 3 years ago, I did interview you for another podcast called This Meharian Life. And you had the same answer about your husband. So I'm very glad that that has not changed. You did. Everything you're saying, I was like, I remember this. So very nice.
That's
very nice.
So funny. No, he's an incredible human. And I honestly didn't realize how important a partner was until I got married. So please, 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 to all my millennials out there who are currently choosing life partners, choose well. It's the biggest decision you'll ever make in your life.
All right. No pressure. Thanks, Dr. Allen. All right. So thank you so much for spending the time chatting with us. I know you're super busy. Where can people find you?
I am online. I am on Twitter and Instagram at Dr. J. Sheree. So DrJayShereE. So I use Twitter mainly to keep up with other physicians, and, you know, my feed is kind of curated that way. But for just social stuff, posting, just random keeping in touch, Instagram's the way. And then check out my website and my podcast, Millennial Health, as well.
Awesome. All of these will be in the show notes. Thank you so much for chatting.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate this.
The author and activist Marianne Williamson wrote, "Our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us. We ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, fabulous? Actually, who are you not to be?" To learn more about the Dr. Hustle podcast, view past episodes, and to view today's show notes, visit our website at drhustle.com. And if you enjoyed the show, I also want to encourage you to look up the podcast at your respective platforms and leave a rating and review. It will help other people just like yourself find the Dr. Hustle community and help it grow. Don't forget to follow us on social media at dr.hustle on Instagram and dr_hustle on Twitter. And if you want to reach out to me personally, you have guest recommendations or contacts, a desire to collaborate, or ways to improve the show, feel free to email me at hustle@drhustle.com. I'd love to hear from you. Once again, thanks for listening. It means a lot.